From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
I look forward to spring for many reasons, not the least of which is the emergence and bloom time of the trilliums. There's a saying that good things come in threes, and trilliums are certainly proof of that. Today's guest, who's here to talk trilliums and more, is Uli Lorimer of Native Plant Trust in Massachusetts, where they're about to celebrate their 10th annual Trillium Week, and the organization is celebrating its 125th anniversary, too. So more in a moment, but first, these messages.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners. On the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
Uli Lorimer is Director of Horticulture at Native Plant Trust, the nation's oldest native plant conservation organization. Uli, who is also the author of the Northeast Native Plant Primer, became Director of Horticulture in 2019 at Native Plant Trust, which was founded in 1900 as the New England Wildflower Society. Before that, he was longtime curator of the Native Flora Garden at Brooklyn Botanic Garden, and I'm so glad to welcome him back to the show to talk about things of spring. So hi, Uli, how are you?
Good. So pleased to be back. Thanks again.
Yeah. Lots going on there, huh? And lots to celebrate and enjoy, you guys.
Yeah, this is a big year for us. I think first and foremost, the 125th anniversary is a huge milestone for us. And we're just so proud of all the things that Native Plant Trust has achieved in that 125-year period, and really looking forward to continuing our excellent work.
Yeah, I mean, the nation's oldest plant conservation organization, that's a pretty wonderful thing. And it's had various names along the way, but it is the same organization. And you're in, I guess, your home garden, so to speak, is in Framingham, Massachusetts, yes?
That's correct. That's where Garden in the Woods is located. And if it had a birthday, it would be 94 years old this year. So coming up on 100. Yes, the garden was started in 1931.
Okay.
When Will Curtis purchased the property from a railroad company and started laying out the paths beginning to enact his vision for this place to be a showcase for native wildflowers.
Well, it's a must visit. If people are in the Northeast, it's a must visit. So there's lots going on there. In person, there's also, you're having your 10th annual, I think I said in the introduction, Trillium Week. And so that's what, May 11th to 18th, and lots of special events around that in person.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And then we're having an evening event on the 16th of May called Twilight Trilliums. also kicking off a little before, at the beginning of May, we're also hosting a native plant symposium called Join the Movement on May 3rd.
And that's virtual, so anyone listening can join that. And you have quite a list of speakers, yes?
Yes, it is completely virtual. And we've got Trevor Smith from Weston Nurseries. We have Edwina Van Gaal from Perfect Earth, Dan Wilder, who's over at the Norcross Wildlife Foundation, and yours truly is the speaker lineup. So it should be some great conversations.
So I'll give the links with the transcript of the show over on awaytogarden.com. I'll give the links to all of how to find out about the virtual and the in-person and 125th celebration and all of that good stuff. So, okay. So trilliums.
Yes.
They are well named. They're well named since all their parts, I guess, come in threes. Yes.
Yes. Yes. I mean, it was dubbed Trillium by Linnaeus in his attempt to describe the quote threeness of the plant. So, and it is really, it's one of the, I think, most characteristic Eastern North American woodland plants that exist. And we have a really fantastic collection, an accredited collection at Garden in the Woods. But aside from talking about how to grow them, I also wanted to touch upon an aspect of trilliums that some people might not know, which is that many of them are actually quite fragrant.
And that just surprises me because as much as I've crawled around in the springtime soil and bent over and enjoyed all these beautiful little ephemerals and all these little babies coming up, I never thought to stick my nose in a trillium and smell it.
Yes, and so just as a warning, some of them smell good and some of them do not. So we've been using a botanical key written by Alan Weekly, who's at the North Carolina Herbarium, in his most recent publication about the flora of the Southeast. And since that contains the bulk of the diversity of trilliums, it's a really great key to get familiar with, to figure out what all the different species of trilliums are. And there's been a number of newly described species and new discoveries as of late too. So, we're still uncovering more in the world of trilliums. But
And when you say key, it's like it gives it tells how to differentiate one from another, how to sort of key them out. Yes, like
yes.
yes, okay.
Yeah. So, broadly speaking, we have trilliums that where the flowers are called sessile and they have mottled leaves, so the flowers sit directly on, like, on the plane where the leaves are.
Yes.
And then you have trilliums that are called pedicellate because the flowers sit on a little pedicel that raises the flower either above the surface of the leaves, or in some cases of the nodding trilliums, the stalk kind of hangs below the
Yes.
plane of the leaves.
Yes.
So yeah, so this key is organized on along those larger principles, and then it gets really into detail. And the reason that I want to call it out is because it's one of the only ones that I've actually seen the fragrance written into,
Oh.
a technical document. And I've highlighted a couple sort of delicious ones here to share with you. There's a species called Trillium delicatum. And when I think of delicatum, I think of, like, the delicata squash. That's just sort of the
Absolutely.
first thing that comes to mind. But Alan's key notes that it has a floral fragrance of horse manure.
Oh, that's delicate.
Yes.
not definitely.
Right. Next in the couplet is Trillium reliquum, which is one of two trilliums that's actually on the Endangered Species Act. So this is not one that you're going to find available, and it
Right.
shouldn't be available. But he notes that its floral fragrance is of rotten meat.
Nice.
Really, what that's pointing to is a lot of these ones have those dark maroon flowers, and that they're preferred pollinators are going to be the things that would be drawn to rotten meat or horse manure. So flies, fungus gnats, beetles, not pretty butterflies or anything like that. So it's a pollination strategy more than anything. Then we have other ones that are there's another pair, Trillium decipiens and Trillium underwoodii, which have a yeasty sweet, similar to overripe bananas, or yeasty sweet, or reminiscent of stale beer as the fragrance notes. So there, and really, you have to be able to stick your nose in on a nice warm day in order to be able to get some of these different notes.
Isn't there one that has a common name of like Stinking Benjamin, or did I just make that up? Or
No, not at all.
oh,
That
I
also
didn't make
some. No, you're
it
right. That's actually one that grows for us here in the Northeast. It's the Trillium erectum, which also sometimes gets called the wet dog Trillium.
Oh, and I call it Wake Robin. Is that I call it Wake Robin? Yes.
Wake
Yeah.
robin's another common name that gets
Yeah.
applied to a lot of different species. But
Yeah.
he lists the fragrance of erectum as unpleasant and musty.
Oh, sorry
So.
about that. That's the one that when I came to my place many decades ago, that was ex in existence. That lived here already. So
Yeah.
that's my, where I lo am located. That's the one that I'll see the most.
So on the other side of these, maybe more unpleasant fragrances, two of the yellow flowered trilliums, Trillium luteum, which smells lemon-like, it's actually really really wonderful, and Trillium discolor has more of a clove-like fragrance. And so they're really both wonderful garden woodland garden plants. And then Trillium vasii smells rose-like, which I think is really great because most of the other ones are not so nice.
Apparently.
But the backstory behind all of this is that at Garden in the Woods we grow Trillium cuneatum, which is another one of these mottled leaves and usually maroon-flowered species. But you can have petals that are maroon, bronze, green, or even yellow. So there's a lot of different color forms, and so you don't really know what you're talking about until we decided to follow the fragrance key. And in this case, it smells like fresh green apples, or like calycanthus, if you know the like strawberry, the Florida anise. And it was such an amazing way to be able to identify these particular trillium in the garden just based on the fragrance. And it just kind of it opened up this whole new world of appreciation for this plant that I didn't know before.
And you've known them well for a long time. You've been working with them for a long time. So that's interesting. That's a whole new dimension. That's wonderful.
I mean, there's other ways to tell them apart, of course, but the fragrance thing, and I look at a fair amount of technical keys in my life, and there's not very many that I can think of that include fragrance as a diagnostic character. So, pretty neat stuff.
Oh, that's great. When I always am looking, and not right this minute, but shortly, once they're kind of up and then they come into bloom and so forth, I'm always looking to see where I've got a good patch going and maybe I can steal a couple. And move them to somewhere else and keep my, expanded territory thing go that I've been doing for a long time, move them into new places. And it's really interesting, for such a de delicate little creature, when you dig one up for the first time, I think it's startling to see what's underneath the ground. If it's an established kind of clump, there's this knobby, gnarly rhizomey thing that almost looks woody or something. You know what I mean? It's funky looking.
And kind of contrary to what most people would think, when it's in bloom is actually the ideal time to, lift them and divide them. Most people think, oh, I should wait until after the flowers are done or before it blooms. Now springtime is the active time. That knobby rhizome you'll see has little bands on it if you look at it and inspect it closely.
Right,
And
it's like
each
ridged almost.
Yeah, so each one of those is what's called a terminal bud scar. And so you can actually look at your rhizome and you can count them almost like tree rings to see how old that funky, knobby little rhizome is. And some of them, something that might be the size of my thumb could be 20, 25 years old. And that just completely blows my mind that, this thing's just slow and steady been increasing for, over 2 decades. And when you see a really, really big one, we have a couple clumps here in the garden that I think are probably 60 or 70 years old, and it's just amazing to see.
And they don't, even when you're just getting started, or when a mature plant sets seed that the ants are grateful to move around, and they march off to a new spot and you get some seedlings. It's no time soon that you get flowers. The plant matures. There's a lag, yes.
It takes, from seed, it takes about sort of 4 to 5 years before you might get something big enough to have maybe a smaller size flower. And then, the really larger ones, the better part of a decade.
And that's why I mentioned it, because you just said, here's this thing that, 60, 70. I mean, for it to accomplish that, if it even has to go through this period when it's not even barely above ground, you know what I mean? There's not even much of a plant, and yet it manages to accomplish this. It's quite amazing.
It's astounding. I mean, what I also love is the story that you get to summertime and it gets hot and dry and maybe the leaf begins to go dormant for the season. It's not just sitting there underground. In fact, for most of summer and fall into when it gets cold, it's busy using that energy it stored to form next year's like leaf bud and flower bud. And then it sits for a little period of dormancy over winter when things are cold and maybe frozen. And then as soon as it gets the right cues, that bud is ready to go, and ready, already fully formed. So there's this kind of trade-off between how much energy can it store in the springtime through that, through its tripartite solar panel, and then how much does it have to spend to make next year's solar panel? And I think about this, and it's kind of a sad reality, but you know who really loves to eat trilliums?
Well, I mean, I think deer do, but I don't know
They
who else
sure
does.
do. The deer do. And I think that's one of the sort of the bigger threats to a lot of these is that they get munched when they're above ground, and there's no way for the plant to make another leaf for the season. And so that's a deficit in its energy reserves. And next year it'll try again, and the rhizome will shrink or get smaller. And if it gets eaten in several years in a row, then that's it. That trillium is done.
So we have deer browse, we have invasion of invasive plants taking over more territory in the areas that used to have all of these spring wildflowers and so forth. And we have, I mean, in some areas of the country, the feral pigs apparently are, because they just kind of churn up the soil and forget the trilliums ever coming back after that. So I mean, these are plants that are under pressure, under great pressure.
No, absolutely. And there's a lot of them that have that are considered globally rare because their natural ranges are pretty constricted to specific areas in the southeast. There are folks that are growing these and putting them on for sale. A lot of folks growing them from seed, which as we just explained, takes a long time and accounts for how expensive they can be. But sort of as like a PSA, for your listeners, be careful if you find a place that's offering, bare root trilliums, like a bag of 100 for really cheap.
Guess where those came from?
Exactly. We don't want to support folks that are just going out into the woods and ripping them off for a quick buck. So do your due diligence and make sure your vendors are reputable.
So when we spoke the other day on the phone, as a preliminary thing to our conversation today, you talked to me about a way to use some of the smaller scale trilliums and other little tiny springy wild woodlandy native things that I had never thought about really, which you called mossy patches. And I wanted to just have you kind of try to conjure that for people, and we'll have some pictures with the transcript of the show, of course. But
Absolutely.
what does that mean?
If you spend a lot of time in the same place, and taking care of a garden in the same place, you go through, and particularly for us here in the Northeast, you go through this annual cycle of, the leaves come out and then the leaves come down in the fall, and then you either let them lay if that's possible, or sometimes you have to move them out of the way of a path or from smothering things. And so sometimes it can be really difficult to cultivate what I would call like belly plants or things that you have to get down really, really small, delicate little plants, because the leaf litter just simply smothers them or it covers them up, and it makes it hard for them to grow. And so the opposite of that is I began to notice that there were these patches in our garden where the leaves didn't accumulate and moss was growing naturally there. And it was maybe, it's the way the wind blows or the way that we manage the pathways or the leaf litter that just kept leaves from accumulating there. And it became this sort of like aha moment that if nature's already keeping this spot clear of leaves, then why not take advantage of that and use it to display these really wonderful dwarf plants? And I saw this, the first place that I saw this to really wonderful effect was at the Mount Cuba Center, maybe about a decade or more ago. And they had this wonderful mossy patch underneath of a dogwood tree at the sort of shady end of their wildflower meadow. and they had planted it with Houstonia, little bluets or Quaker ladies.
Oh,
And
yeah.
it was just the most stunning sight. It was like a dusting of snow in May with this wonderful green, vibrant backdrop. And I thought, wow,
Yeah.
that's amazing. And like, we should do that too. And so
Right.
we got
Instead of
to.
condemning the moss and saying, oh, yeah, it's moss. And it's, because that's the other thing about moss is that some people disdain it. They think it's a problem, right?
Yeah.
You know what I
Well,
mean?
and I see sometimes I see lawns around here that are a lot moss, and then people
Yes.
keep fighting the moss, thinking that they could get their
Yes.
lawn growing when what they
Yes.
ought to do is embrace the moss and, reduce the lawn and plant other things.
Which
So,
is this is in the mossy patches.
yeah,
Yeah.
exactly.
So some of the little trilliums, some of the smaller scale
Yeah,
trilliums could.
so there's two species that I think are really wonderful. There's one called Trillium nivalli, which is a like a dwarf snow trillium, and then there's a whole another group called Trillium pusillum,
Oh, yes.
and so the pusillum was a single species, but this one, thanks to a lot of the they're called dwarf trilliums or least trilliums. Thanks a lot of genetic work and kind of, broad regional distribution. That single species concept has been split into about 10 different varieties.
Oh, my.
And so there are things like one that's called Alabamicum that only grows in Alabama. There's one that's called Carolina, which is along the Piedmont fall line in Carolina. There's Trillium pusillum monticulum, which is in the mountains of West Virginia. There's one called Ozarkanum that's only out in Arkansas. So you can kind of get to see that they're beginning to name these based on their locations.
Yes.
But it's so it has this kind of funny range, but they're a really wonderful species that would kind of get lost in a garden that had heavier leaf litter, and so they're really ideal
Oh.
for these mossy patches.
Oh. Yeah,
I mentioned
sorry.
I was going to say I mentioned the Houstonia is another. That's probably my most favorite one to put in
Yeah.
there.
Yeah. So we have maybe 3 more minutes, and I at the edge of my property, you're making me think of from the very first spring I was here, and now even more so, there's moss because there's a tree line, and Myanthemum, Canada
Yes.
Mayflower, is that what it's called? What's it called?
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly it.
Myanthemum is intertwined in the moss, and it's quite beautiful. It's just this natural comp these natural companions,
Yeah.
and
Well,
they're
and
just happy and beautiful together.
I like the Myanthemum. It has this wonderful kind of round leaf, and it's like a nice, shape contrast with the green of the moss as a
Yeah.
backdrop.
And could we do it with non-native things too, if people have little tiny other things? Or
Absolutely.
so it's this is kind of getting me thinking, like, because I have a lot of moss lawn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of my favorite really early bloomers is Iris reticulata. There's the species, and then there's a couple of great selections. Catherine Hodgkins is one with a really nice pale blue flower. These would just look absolutely stunning in a little moss patch. And then after the flowers are done, you get some foliage, and then at some point it goes dormant for in the summer. And then before you know it, it'll bring you joy again in early March when it emerges.
Yeah, I mean, it really, as opposed again, as opposed to like bemoaning a spot where this moss is happening or whatever, or as you say, having these tiny little treasures that are smothered under the deciduous forest canopy, in some places. This is a really like jewel, like put them on this beautiful carpet, and then they're like little jewels. Yeah, wonderful.
And if it's like a wet spot, you could play around with like little saxifrages or like primroses. I mean, there's all kinds of possibilities. If it's a drier spot, there are woodland sedums, Sedum terminum, for example. I mean, there's all kinds of possibilities that you could really explore. There's a whole world of small miniature plants, maybe even some things borrowed from the alpine plant world would do really well in this kind of situation.
All right. Well, Uli Lorimer, I'm so glad to speak to you, and congratulations, 125 years of at Native Plant Trust, and the 10th anniversary Trillium Week is coming up, May 11th to 18th. And like I said earlier, I'm going to give all the links for how people can attend your virtual symposium on Saturday, May 3rd, for instance, at which you're one of the speakers, or come and visit in person and so forth with the transcript of the show over on awaytogarden.com. But it's good to speak to you and think about spring, because it's been a little bit of an up and down spring in the Northeast where we both are.
Yes. No, I'm glad it's here and the sun is shining and there's all sorts of exciting things popping out of the ground right now.
Well, I hope I'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah,
Thanks.
so do I. Thanks so much, Margaret.
And I hope I'll talk to all the rest of you soon again, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as at awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners on the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.